All of this that we've been talking about boils down to a simple ancient question. What is justice?
This is David from Huntington. Justice is whatever is convenient for law enforcement at such time. My friend and I were driving in my brother's old rusty Honda one day when out of nowhere, an unmarked police car came speeding up behind us. He pulled us over. He didn't say why he had pulled us over, just that we were to both get out of the vehicle. They searched both of us and the Honda. Whenever we asked why they were doing this, they got angry, eventually having both of us in handcuffs while they searched us again. After about half an hour of searching and not finding anything, they let us go without explanation.
This is Mike Mount from South Carolina. We lived in California for many years, and we could not find a lawyer in the state who would represent us because the judge was retired and had too much power. Just typical of the old boy cronyism network in the East, much more than in the West.
That cynicism and bitterness from two of our listeners is a long-recognized toxin in a democratic society. Patterns of perceived injustice erode the belief that our democratic institutions are concerned with everyone equally. Maybe they pick and choose between different groups to favor or disadvantage. Justice starts with a collective belief in fairness, which goes back to the days of Socrates and Aristotle and before. Put your philosopher hat on for us. Justice to me is, it's an ancient question. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Justice to me is, complete that sentence with anything from an episode of Law and Order to the Boston Celtics winning the NBA playoffs. You can say that, or something more high-minded and philosophical. For instance, how much does justice demand political loyalty?
You know, I think if you have an absolute sense of justice striving at the moral, you then have a responsibility to cultivate a sense of loyalty and emotional attachment that will make that real.
That's Martha Nussbaum, professor of law and ethics at the University of Chicago Law School, who will be one of our guides through the big ideas of the ancients and how they relate to our times. Our other guide in this endeavor is David Miller, professor of political theory at the University of Oxford and author of Justice for Earthlings.
Although societies and institutions have many virtues, I think justice is always going to be the number one. And without justice, it's hard to see how any institution or how any society could be legitimate in the eyes of its members.
Miller cautions that in our time, justice does not always mean exact equality. And he notes the writings of American philosopher John Rawls from Harvard, who wrote a lot about inequality.
What Rawls said was that if you were going to have inequalities, they had to be justifiable to the people who had less. So he wasn't, of course, saying that every kind of resource, every kind of freedom must always be distributed in exactly the same way, in exactly an equal way. But he did think that if you were going to have some benefiting and not others, that had to be justifiable to the ones who got less. So I think that's a reasonable starting point for a discussion of justice.
Miller and Martha Nussbaum both believe that the issues of justice for our time, issues of economic justice, tolerance, pluralism, require that we all continually revisit what we mean by justice, just as the ancients did. And Professor Nussbaum says the ancients hardly ever agreed.
I think we need to distinguish three periods. The first period is the 5th century BC, a kind of high watermark period of the Athenian democracy. And there the thought was that everyone who was a citizen, which as I say was just 10%, was to be treated equally, and everything important was done by lottery. Then the second period is the period of the philosophers. Plato was in the next century, and he conducted a radical critique of that, proposed an ideal city where only certain very intellectually gifted people who were trained in mathematics and the sciences would have political power, and justice was thought to be an organic phenomenon. You had justice just by being subservient to the wise. The ones that I really like, and what I call the third period, were the Stoic philosophers, who were the first ones who said that all human beings were born equal in dignity, and that therefore they ought to be treated with equal respect and given equal access to education and privileges, even if they weren't in our own country. And I think in all respects, they're the most attractive and interesting model for modern thought.
Professor Martha Nussbaum from the University of Chicago will be back with more from Nussbaum and Professor David Miller as we explore justice for earthlings here in the 21st century. What can we learn from the ancients? What could we teach them? This is The Takeaway. Continuing now with our exploration of what the ideas of justice given to us by the ancients in philosophy and religion mean in our time. Martha Nussbaum from the University of Chicago says that the ancients would find plenty to criticize about American democracy, but they would have marveled at how our system has held together, even when tested by war, unrest, or even bad ballots and contested elections in our time.
Early in American history, there was a real risk in the early 19th century that things would fall apart. And then, of course, they did fall apart in the Civil War. And so the whole question of whether the polity would hold together was, for a long time, a really burning question. Now, what's interesting is that I think many people, if not most people, think that the decision in Bush v. Gore was not very well done. And that maybe, you know, in that sense, Gore was elected. But no one thought that there should be a revolution or an upheaval around that. They accepted the word of the court, even though they didn't actually think the justices had done a very good job. And I think that's basically true in the criminal justice system. This big racial divide makes for a lot of suspicion and skepticism. And I think that's one of the things we got to struggle with in the future, because the criminal justice system has served as a way of perpetuating the subordination of African Americans in many, many respects. For example, taking away the vote for life if you're convicted of a felony and so forth. So we need to work on that.
Maintaining loyalty to the system while ensuring equality, it's an ancient issue of justice revised by the multicultural societies in our day. David Miller from the University of Oxford says multiculturalism complicates some issues the ancients may have seen as settled.
I think that despite very wide cultural variations, and I've done a bit of research on this, at the very basic level, I think people everywhere think somewhat the same about issues of justice. But it does complicate it when it comes to a more applied level, because then you have to ask about the ways in which culture frames and conditions the kinds of decisions that people have to make and the kind of constraints that it imposes upon people. So I think that justice in our kind of society has to be alert to culture, but not because it creates some fundamental barrier to understanding between people.
In figuring out how to enforce justice or execute justice in these multicultural communities, you talk a lot about tipping points and thresholds, in the sense that there has to be a level of consensus so that the loyalties are clear. And we've seen here in the United States just recently this question of two young boys being apparently loyal to some community that they didn't live in, far away in Chechnya, motivated them to take out actions on people in their own community. Now, terrorism has very little to do with justice here, but I'm just wondering if it's possible to even track the extent to which people feel loyal to one group or another in a multicultural society.
Well, I think it's a very important issue. I think that the idea of justice, and particularly the idea of social justice, which has been the main idea throughout the 20th century and into the 21st, does rely upon the idea that people see themselves as belonging primarily to one particular community. And so when people migrate, for example, the expectation has to be that they take on a new allegiance to the society they join. And I think if we were to get into a situation where that was no longer the case, then our thinking about justice would have to begin to change in ways perhaps we wouldn't want. So I think it probably reinforces the point that nation building in the context of immigration is going to be an important ongoing project if we care about justice domestically as well as globally.
David Miller of the University of Oxford.
There's another thing that I want to raise here, which is economic justice between nations.
Martha Nussbaum of the University of Chicago was very anxious to say that the ancients might be particularly interested in the competition for resources between very unequal nations today.
Because when we talk about the U.S. and then we talk about India, well, the difference in life expectancy, the difference in all kinds of opportunities is vast. But then if we were to take in the poorest nations in the world, for example, some of the nations of southern Africa, we would quickly have much more inequality even than that. That life expectancy at birth in some nations is about 45 years. Life expectancy at birth in the U.S. is by now 80 years. So what are we going to do about that? What are we going to do about access to nutrition, to basic life opportunities, to pharmaceuticals in the nations of the world that are not as rich and advantaged as our own. And I think that's the big problem of justice that I would like to see the 21st century focus on.
What do you think Plato would say about that precise problem that you've outlined?
Well, I think Plato had absolutely no interest in anything that took place outside the city itself, except insofar as it might be attacked by its enemies. So I think he would say that's not our affair. But Cicero would strongly disagree, and Cicero would say that we really owe it to people who are being attacked by their enemies elsewhere to intervene and to help them in their struggle for justice.
Cicero is very interesting because he actually has an idea which I also find quite illuminating, which is the idea of concentric circles of justice, starting with a small group and then going out wider and wider until it encompasses the world as a whole. So I think he would see that there's lots that needs to be done, not only in our cities and our states, but in the world. But I think he would still recognize the ideas that we have and would have some idea about what would need to be done to make those ideas a reality. Plato, I think, is more difficult because Plato has a very simple sort of monolithic idea of justice that I find harder to get to grips with.
And to say nothing of the fact that he would completely be a fish out of water in our society with all these books and iPads and computers. And he would break out into quite a rash, I suspect.
I think that might well be true.
That's David Miller, professor of political theory at the University of Oxford, author of Justice for Earthlings, and Martha Nussbaum, professor of law and ethics at the University of Chicago Law School. Join them. Get philosophical with us. Justice to me is, complete that sentence, at 877-8-MY-TAKE. For many, though, this is the voice of justice.
The defendant is not guilty. But somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal.
Gregory Peck playing the fictional Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird. Another case of justice denied coming up, a real one.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.